define what the goal looks like and then take those tactical steps as quickly as possible. And it could be that you move around on the way, and you should. That's where you should take those learnings and move on. Don't beat yourself up if you make a mistake. You know, fail fast. That's the key thing. And then come back to it and don't make it again.
It's the E-commerce Masterplan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. This is one of our masterclass episodes where we get an e-commerce expert onto the show to share the key things you need to know in one super important e-commerce subject. This time, we're tackling the world of integrations and automation, and I guess data as well. This is one of those big themes for 2025. If you want to succeed this year, or if you want to succeed in 2 or 3 years' time, you need to start getting your head around this and building it. It's going to build stronger ROI for your business as a whole. It's going to make you slicker, more agile, more able to take on new challenges, more able to twist and pivot, enable you to make a better performance and better customer experience for your customers. What this has the potential to do for you is, quite frankly, endless. It's so crucial in what you could do in your business. And we've got a super duper expert of this to come and talk to you, someone who's kind of been doing this for more than the last 20 years and who now runs a company who have a brilliant setup for making it super easy for you to really do some super next level stuff. Did I say super too many times there? I hope not. Please listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out my guest's top tips as well, which are very cool. There's an SEO one. Would you believe it? An SEO one on an integrations episode coming up, and my own take on this episode you'll get at the end too.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
And now to introduce our special guest. Jim Herbert is the CEO at Patchworks, an e-commerce focused iPaaS who are all about helping you to automate and streamline your data. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Chloe. Thank you for having me on. I'm really looking forward to this chat.
It's great to have you on the show. As the listeners probably have worked out by now, I love a bit of integration, automation and data talk. So thoroughly appreciating having you, and a super expert in all of that, here on the show. But how did you end up in the world of e-commerce?
So it's pretty terrifying. I'd say terrifying because I'm nearly 52, as I keep talking about, and I come back to it a lot. I started working in the late 90s, 99 actually, in the e-commerce world. So I ended up working for a Fast Five startup, as they were calling them. It was called Metrius. It was part of KPMG Consulting. And basically, web was the thing. So I've been a programmer since I was 8 years old. Started programming on the ZX Spectrum back in the day. Went through a computer science degree, was working in banking, doing a lot of kind of straight through processing integration from the front office to the back office, ultimately, of trades, you know, stock trades, ultimately, and then moving through portfolio management, that kind of stuff. And I thought, well, this internet thing seems like it's going to be pretty big. Maybe I should retrain into that. So on the back of Y2K finishing and the Euro migration, which are the two big projects I've been contracting on, I took this job and, going into 2000, started building ASP.NET websites and then worked on ATG. So ATG, Art Technology Group, as it was at the time, was the first or one of the first kind of demandware, i.e. Salesforce Commerce Cloud now, Hybris, IBM WebSphere. It was one of those kind of competitors, ultimately. And ended up building a website for NTL business. So B2B immediately. And it was an interesting time. We had a lot of people talk about composability in e-commerce. Everything was composable then because we were building it all for the first time. So I can remember having calls with NatWest Bank about how we could build a payment gateway to actually take online payments for small businesses. Ultimately, we wanted broadband because it was really hard, with the exception of kind of SagePay had come out and Worldpay were just getting going as well. There wasn't many options out there, if you know what I mean. And so we had to build everything from scratch on top of this ATG platform. That's how I got into it. Ended up running my own agency, building a lot of Hybris websites. So that was a company called Cenerix, started off with ATG, ended up with Hybris, and then Demandware near the end when we got bought by Publicis Group, ultimately got bought by a company called LBI and became part of Publicis. And then after 2.5 years as the GM of BigCommerce towards 2020 COVID times, here I am as CEO of Patchworks, back in the integration game again. So I think if you cut me in half like a stick of rock, I'll basically say the word integration.
Let's not cut you in half, though. Just
no, let's not do that.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? You're saying about how everything was composable back then. I often get asked, you know, how have things changed in the 20 years you've been in the industry? And it's like, well, in many ways, nothing's changed. We're still trying to do exactly the same things. It's just how we do them has become both easier and more complicated, which is an awful answer, but I think it's the honest one. Do you think that's how it's evolved?
Yeah, I completely agree, actually. It's one of the things you learn as a programmer is things called design patterns. So Martin Fowler was kind of the guru of design patterns, ended off either working for or founding ThoughtWorks, a consultancy business that I worked with closely with some customers in the past. And, you know, design patterns came out of architecture, right? So, you know, if you're building an arch, there's only so many arch shapes you can take based on the load and the width and all the other bits and pieces. So architects have a book of patterns. And Martin Fowler and the team came up with, Gang of Four, I think it was, I can't remember now, came up with this idea for technology as well. And so there are design patterns for that too, ultimately. So you walk into a situation, you go, oh, I've got a pattern for this. It's like this one. I always talk about the anti-patterns, patterns to avoid. I always talk about the hammer anti-pattern, which is an easy one to understand. You know, if all you've got is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail is the idea, right? So the what's really been interesting over the last sort of 25 years of e-commerce is huge amounts of the stuff are the same. They're just being done in a different way. So from an IT architecture perspective, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, probably 15 years ago, actually, service-oriented architecture was the big thing behind the scenes. And it's all about enterprise service buses. And, you know, you build out your service library internally for a big enterprise, and then you hang things off of it. Not a million miles away conceptually from an iPaaS, not surprisingly, from what we built at Patchworks. So if you look at a website, you know, search engine, you need a search engine. Yeah, still the same. Ultimately, you still have a product detail page, you still have a product listing page. I think AI will shake that up. And, you know, I know NRF was a month ago and everyone was talking about agentic AI as being the big buzzword of the day. And yeah, I think that's right. You know, if you can have a chatbot that can scale to millions of people visiting your website, things could be disrupted coming forward. But yeah, right now, sadly, you know, it's a bit same old quite often, which is why I like to delve in a different bit of it every few years.
It's interesting you mentioned AI there, because I think I've done a lot of interviews about AI in the last 12 months and trying to get to the nub of how it actually benefits e-commerce brands. And the thing which comes out every single one of those, every time you mention algorithms and artificial intelligence, machine learning, is if the data you're putting into it isn't excellent, then the results you get out are inevitably going to be shit. So not supposed to swear on the podcast, but it was worth it that moment in time. Sorry, anyone who's offended by that. But it does make me think that is probably why I reckon 2025 is going to be the year of integrations and automation. Because A, we've got to have the data right, and B, we've got to have the data in the right places. And all those, if we're going to embrace the opportunity of automations and AI, then we can't be surrounded by, oh, Tom knows how to do that one. Or, oh yeah, Sue's got a workaround for that. Or, oh yeah, 90% of it's done. Then you just need to copy and paste this column. That stuff has got to be eradicated. Would you agree, very long-winded question here, is 2025 the year of integrations and automation?
I think it is. In fact, I heard a term coined over Christmas, you know, doing my usual downtime, but really still being switched on, reading stuff all over the place from probably Gartner, but maybe not, because I think I'm stealing it from them, hyper-automation. I think it really is the year of hyperautomation for us in 2025. AI is interesting because the models are now there, right? They're very mature. They do hallucinate. You're absolutely right. There's a tried and tested phrase in IT, which is garbage in, garbage out. So you have to have the right data. But what's enabling AI is access to that data. So the API world, this is one of the big differences between that service-oriented architecture and iPaaS world we're talking to now, is back in those days, you know, there was a database and you had to write a lot of services hanging around it. That still happens, right? You still have people doing that. That's why we launched a database connector for Patchworks last month. But the important thing is modern systems have got the APIs available. So then it's about getting the data out and getting the right data out and putting it in the right format if you are going to use AI to train those models. But before you even go down that route, you probably want to make sure you automate your business. So, you know, the key use cases that we often talk to at Patchworks are around order automation, not surprisingly, or order operations, as one of our frenemy competitors likes to call it. And I think we should probably get on that bandwagon. But, you know, it's making sure that those orders come through from all the various different channels that you have, e-commerce, you know, your B2B channel, maybe from some other system from via a spreadsheet, are clean, the data's in the right format, you can check it's all been ingested properly, and then it gets moved through automatically without you having to spend, you know, time ringing up Tom who knows how to move an order from this warehouse to that warehouse. The more you automate as a business, the better and more scalable you are. I know that myself running Patchworks itself, right? And so I think 25 is going to be a big year for that because hopefully there's an economic recovery taking place, certainly in some areas of the world. You know, there's been some good data coming out of Black Friday over here in the UK for retailers, which is great. But in addition, that means you can make more opportunity if you've got the right access to the right data. We should always concentrate on that bottom line, right? So you need to make sure that your costs are under control as well. And automation is always helping with that.
So I know that a lot of the brands listening to this are going, okay, great. That sounds like a big, complicated project, doing all these automations. I'm actually going to have to remember how that one works and this one works and pull the whole thing. Because, and I say this as someone whose Q1 job is to automate more of her own business. So I am deep in the spending a lot of time on it now for the benefits that come in the future. So what would you say are the key reasons that any e-commerce brand listening to this should be taking the time in the first half of the year away from peak to invest in automations, integrations, and getting their house in order, I suppose, to be ready for those opportunities you were mentioning?
Yeah, it's to so you can deal with those peak times with no hassle or worry, right? That's what you really want. You need to be able to make sure that should something blow up on TikTok, if you're going direct to consumer or via a marketplace, and you've got 10,000 of widget A, that all 10,000 of them get shipped out directly to the user with minimal problems, right? So you don't want, the only thing you probably want is people running around the warehouse and packing those things, unless you've got an automated warehouse. And that's another level of automation that is available at a price, of course. But, you know, if you concentrate right now and looking at what you've got in your existing infrastructure, look for those manual tasks. Look for tasks that go wrong quite often. So, you know, a common use case we see at Patchworks is a brand that's grown really quickly on a Shopify or a BigCommerce, you know, a kind of a standard SaaS e-commerce platform, ultimately, that gives you loads of power, which is great, right? And then you install some apps to do some bits and pieces. And then you find out those apps clash a bit because, you know, they've been written in isolation, not surprisingly. And so what happens is like maybe the order goes out the warehouse, but the inventory stops being updated because something gets changed, that kind of stuff. That causes a problem. You never find out about it as an e-commerce manager because old Bill down the warehouse has forgotten to tell anybody. He just fixes it every day. What's difficult when you've got 10,000 orders coming in, like we did with Mint Velvet on the afternoon of Black Friday, to fix all 10,000 orders, right? So you need to make sure that that is the automated part of it. And the way to do it is another design pattern, oddly, coming back to the kind of opening to this. We haven't rehearsed this, I'm very pleased to say. It's like they call it the strangler fig pattern. So a strangler fig is a plant that grows up the side of trees. You see them all over Florida. They're in a lot of tropical jungle. There's equivalents in the UK. They don't quite do the same thing. A strangler fig effectively, in the end, kills that plant. But you don't really notice it because it's formed its own trunk around the other, you know, where the original plant was. It does that by slowly but surely taking that on. So, you know, the classic things like any given Sunday, how do you win, right? You know, we just get a bit better. So in this quarter, work out where the issues are and then identify a plan. Like, what can I buy top this year? What can I do in Q2? And how much can that be, if you know what I mean? So can I just address that one problem there? Or can I maybe address these three problems as I go into the summer so that this year in peak, those problems don't happen again? It was I did a round table just before peak, and it was really interesting. A lot of people there were really, really happy with the technology they had. It was probably about 80 people I spoke to at that event, because I was going from table to table, and there was, you know, eight on each. But four people on there were terrified. Back in the old days, some of their websites were running on non-SaaS stacks. It was like, I'm not sure it's going to stay. I hope it stays up. Let's see, if you know what I mean. Whereas other ones were thinking about, you know, I've just changed warehouse provider. Fingers crossed, you know, they'll go that side as well, if you know what I mean. So it's really important to get that stuff bedded in by August time at the latest, really. Having said that, we had someone go live 2 days before Black Friday. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Well, I suppose if the problem's big enough, it's worth taking the risk of 2 days before Black Friday, isn't it? And I love your example there. I think it was Bob in the warehouse who fixes things, because it really highlights, like, and you want Bob in the warehouse to be able to fix things, but you need to build in that feedback loop.
Yeah.
So I think for anyone looking at doing this sort of project this year, who's not talking to the whole company, not just your own team, they're going to miss a lot of opportunity if they're not taking a... Because it's a company-wide approach, these kind of projects, isn't it?
It is. You're right. It's not just about integrating software. It's about integrating teams as well. Back in the day, working for the kind of KPMG consulting to this world and the other consultancies, it was a really interesting way of finding stuff out, because you just spoke to the exec. And it was a classic thing. I'd get rolled in. I graduated from university and went and worked for a Fast Five consultancy, Cambridge Technology Partners. And classically, you get wheeled in. Everyone would say, oh, look, here comes the B team, because clearly you're not the people who are on the sales process, because you're the graduate, if you're not me. And you'd be talking to the heads of all these departments. And I learned pretty early on, actually, by, you know, just walking around and then going to look in the department that I'm meant to be working out. Just talk to other people, just, you know, people who aren't meant to be on the project, and you'll find out what a disconnect there is. So if you find there's an area of your business that's got a problem, don't just ask the head of that business, get involved in it. Like, really get down there and try and work out where the, you know, there's like Undercover Boss, right? The kind of TV series that's out there. Have a bit of that moment. Get down, just have a chat, you know, maybe have a day in the, or a half day in that office, if it's the warehouse, wherever it is. Take everyone out for a beer or for a coffee or whatever drink is available within your business. And, you know, you'll find out pretty quickly where the real issues lie, and then where your, like you say, where those feedback loops are maybe lacking, because you will end up integrating more of your business as well as integrating the software.
I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said there. I think we're definitely on that kind of democratization of data, and the merging, or this de-siloing of teams is definitely on the cusp of becoming what separates the winners from the losers in the next couple of years. But before I go off on that rant, Jim, another question for you, which is, I feel a little cheeky asking you this one, but it was a trend I was seeing people starting to talk about at the tail end of last year, was people saying that 2025 is going to be the year of simplifying the tech stack. Fewer subscriptions, fewer pieces in the tech stack even, and partly because of the desire for greater profit. So which subscription can we cancel? But also, you know, because if we're building the integrations and actually really focusing what we should be doing, then we should have fewer pieces in our tech stack. Is that something you're seeing brands adopt? Are you seeing integrations as being a way towards that goal?
Yeah, we are seeing it in some of our customers. So, you know, it tends to be our larger customers. Patchworks is an interesting proposition as an iPaaS platform. You know, we don't go in necessarily as expensive as some of our larger competitors. So you can make an immediate saving potentially by chopping three Shopify apps into one Patchworks integration. And by immediate, maybe I mean like a 12-month payback, because there is some implementation costs to do that, not surprisingly. So if you're thinking of it that way as a retailer, we're doing that from that perspective. So rather than having those three apps or four apps that might be having the struggles I mentioned earlier, even if they don't, there's a cost to them, I can consolidate that and save 10%. And we all know, particularly in fashion, how important those margins are. Some of the larger ones are doing the same thing, actually. They might be looking at something that's, you know, some of the providers are pure CDP with search and merch technology, discovery technology from a different provider. They're looking at that going, oh, we can bring that together, because actually then I've only got one subscription to pay for and I'll get a deal, because everyone's doing deals at the moment, as always. That's great for us though, because the whole point of Patchworks as a platform is we provide that kind of integration layer, which means that, okay, that bit is now, excuse, was pointing over there, just point it at that bit and remap the data. And then use your agency that you're already working with, your partner you're working with, or your own tech team. That's the whole point of our no-code, low-code technology, is to make that as easy as possible so that they can, you know, they can make that change as easy as possible and, you know, sadly for that tech vendor, but ultimately, you know, have a positive impact on their bottom line costs with no change in the cost of Patchworks in that case, because it's ultimately the same thing, right? So, yeah, without a doubt, we're seeing that as a trend. And I think it's a good trend. People shouldn't buy software because it sounds cool. They should buy software because it has a definite impact on the business. And if it isn't, then why is it there? It's something I've certainly been looking at in my first 2 years of Patchworks as well.
Oh, yeah. I think we're all looking at our software subscriptions all the time. But you're completely right. It's like, if this isn't, you know, just because the sales rep's nice and because it's got a funky logo and it sounds cool, doesn't mean we should be integrating it. But I think also there's that thing of where you buy something to solve a problem because you've got an urgent problem to solve, and it solves, you know, 1/10 of that software product solves your problem, and you ignore the other 90%, and then you end up finding something else to solve another teeny tiny bit. And you do end up just with these bloated tech stacks that slow everything down, that create more opportunity for error. So if you can do all the stuff with an iPass, it makes so much sense. What other benefits are the reasons you think everyone's going to begin integration this year?
I think it's not just about, we talked about a lot about costs. I think we touched on it earlier, but there's also the kind of the speed of change. I read a book years ago called Blur. What was it called? Business at the Speed of Change or something was the subheadline. This is in the late 90s, and it was all about how, you know, technology is moving so fast. And now, it's just, you know, there's a different large learning model every week. You know, is it TikTok? Is it Pinterest? Is it Instagram? By the time this comes out, there's probably another channel for marketplaces that we never even heard of, right? And that's before we even start talking about China and the Middle East and all the other geographies that have their own specific channels and marketplaces to look at. That speed is accelerating. You know, there's the new tech stacks are always out there. And for your particular demographic as a retailer, something could take off, right? There could be an influencer that's really important, an AI influencer maybe. There could be a piece of B2B integration technology that you suddenly have to be involved with. You know, if Apple launched a car tomorrow and then they had an integrated app store and you had some automotive product that you know, if you were in there, you got automated subscription, why would you not be on there, right? So it's not just about the cost reduction bit, it's about chasing the opportunity cost of those opportunities as well. And having a tech stack and APIs available that can be easily integrated into those opportunities. Because the really important bit about the opportunity cost is if you do it before your competitor, you've got a free market until they come along and do that part, right? So we've seen a few people take on Patchworks towards the end of last year, looking at that going, you know, no one's doing that in our area right now. So if we do it first with you guys, and of course I'm sitting there going, yeah, that's great, but you can't have exclusivity. But, you know, if we do it first with you guys, then, you know, there's an X month head start, and then you've already put a brand into that, right? You're already known in that area for doing it. So I think it's about that other side of it. Having the agility to be able to change the market conditions is increasingly important in the world we live in right now.
Yeah, I've been busy the start of this year looking through e-commerce case studies, finding people to be guests on this show, and the number of the big ones from last year who have taken first mover advantage somewhere, which is very easy to sit here and go, well, there's nowhere to get first mover advantage at all anyway. So, well, actually, I think there's still room for some to get first mover advantage on TikTok, I reckon, in the TikTok shop space. That's still early stages. We've got YouTube shop, either launched or pending. I can't remember what state it's at even in the UK at the moment, but that's going to grow as a story this year. We've got Facebook, lots of people predicting that Facebook are going to have a shop that actually works by the end of the year. And it's, you know, you just look at this, you go, well, surely Elon's going to make some money somewhere, hasn't he? So he might end up doing one. And there's going to be, like you said, I think there's going to be a lot of change in our channels over the next 12, 24, 36 months. And if you've got a platform where you can go, okay, the marketing team know how to drive the sales, click. I know it's not quite as easy as click, but we know exactly how to integrate that and avoid as many errors as possible. Then it makes a lot of sense to be future-proofing.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of sense to be future-proofing. One of the things, so you did say we haven't had a rehearsal, and guys, we haven't had a rehearsal of this, but we did have a chat about it, where we vaguely managed to talk about the topic for about 5 minutes. And one of the things we were talking about in that chat was about how it's important to monitor your automations. I was going, what am I supposed, to check they're working? Isn't it just set and forget? So for anyone else who needs a wake up like I do, Jim, how much should we be focusing or building in a monitoring system to make sure our automations are actually doing what we think they should be and they're error reporting to us, etc.?
Yeah, it's absolutely key, without a doubt. And, you know, it's a really interesting sales conversation, this, because we often sell on the demo for the platform, right? It looks lovely. It work, you know, compared to writing a load of code, which was the classic way of doing integrations, you're dropping shapes onto a web-based dashboard and you're, you know, dragging and dropping, mapping files across, and it all looks great from that perspective. Bonza. Once that's live, you never want to look at it again because you just want it sitting there in the background, working as a data pipeline, auto-scaling with traffic, being secure, ISO 27001 and SOC 2 compliant, all those other good things that we've managed to get into the platform through a lot of very hard work from the product team. That's what you really care about. You want it to be up and you want it to be moving the data around. But you do need to make sure, because there's always problems in data, right? You need to make sure the data is going through. So if a problem appears in some data that's consistent, so maybe, you know, someone, we actually had it recently with a customer, somebody comes in and starts uploading a load of data, but they've forgotten to upload it into their ERP first, so that, you know, there's no master record for that product, but it's being loaded into the warehouse. You need to know that, right? That monitoring needs to exist. So it's really key, and we've built that into the platform at various different levels, right? So in what we call a flow level, you can create your own notifications. So effectively, you can go to a Slack channel, an email, some other sort of form, Twilio kind of thing, if you needed that, or if you've got that in the background of your infrastructure, to tell you that there's an error that's taking place. The other thing we added in, so we had that, you know, we basically created what we call our strategic platform. There's an older Patchworks platform that still quite a few people were running on and got through Black Friday on last year. And a feature in there we brought through pretty quickly onto a strategic platform was being able to rerun those flows, right? So if there is that issue, the one I mentioned before, where you haven't loaded the data in, load the data in, go into the console, rerun that notification. So notifications and monitoring are absolutely key. That's all very much at the data level. Actually, underneath that, we have to monitor the software as well, right? So we have I was going to put it up in the background on that TV behind me, but we have a load of kind of more nerdy notifications to take place, tracking database and, you know, all the other bits and pieces, all the Kubernetes expansion stuff that we have on there. So we handle that part, but the data flow part, it's a combination of your agency partner, yourself, and then what goes into those flows. But in the background, we're checking as well, right? Because invariably, if something does go wrong, we'll get an alert internally and we'll let the partner and the customer know too. It's absolutely key. It's the most important thing. It's all very well. It looks brilliant and easy to demo and easy to build. That is really, really important. That's what gives you that agility and speed. But if it doesn't work afterwards, then, you know, we're dead. So it has to work. It's probably 98% of what keeps me awake at night is making sure that works perfectly. But I'm very pleased to say 99.96% uptime on the strategic platform for the last 12 months, and long may it continue.
Long may it continue, indeed. And I think it's kind of like for anyone going, oh God, I've got to optimize, I've got to monitor it even. Well, yeah, but most of that's automated, obviously, because this is all about automation and integration. So it's not like you have to check in every morning that it's okay. It will tell you when you set it up right. So what have we missed? Jim, is there anything we've missed that the audience need to know about if they're planning on embarking on their own integration and automation journey to improve their business this year?
You know, coming back to my hammer anti-pattern piece that I mentioned at the beginning, look for what the quickest way to get live is, if that makes sense. Don't be afraid of doing an MVP, a kind of minimum viable product for your integration. So if you're embarking on a migration to Shopify, and, you know, increasing numbers of enterprise brands are, you know, the Mint Velvet case study launches today, so it will be there for people who want to read after this. Decent size, you know, really well-known, high street name over here in the UK, B2C and B2B, B2B fashion being marketplaces mainly. And they've moved to Shopify, right? Like a lot of these enterprise fashion brands have. And so it might be, and this is going to sound weird, me saying this, it might be that you just install some of the apps that are on there and run a small brand on it to see if it works. But what I would say is make a strategic point of employing probably an architect or somebody who really understands integration, possibly from the old world, the non-Shopify world, and, you know, did it with Hybris and did it with all that kind of good stuff and has the learnings and the scars from trying to do it with 100 apps. to sit there and create you a strategic master plan for your IT. So I often talked about, with my enterprise architect hat on, tactical steps for strategic goal. So define what the goal looks like and then take those tactical steps as quickly as possible. And it could be that you move around on the way, and you should. That's where you should take those learnings and move on. Don't beat yourself up if you make a mistake. You know, fail fast. That's the key thing. And then come back to it and don't make it again. You know, it's about the learnings, right, at the end of the day. And do it outside of peak. Don't make mistakes then.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Jim, are you ready for the top tips?
I am sort of ready.
Okay. Well, I'll take sort of. Sort of is acceptable. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So this was actually a tip from Jason at Orium, who runs Composable.com, gave it to me last year. And I don't do a lot of business book reading, to be honest with you. I tend to read a lot of fiction to try and take my head out of the day-to-day, if you know what I mean. But it's called Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore. And it's all about how to launch disruptive products, basically. So there's a lot of disruptive SaaS conversation within that book, but it's all about how to disrupt the market you're in, coming back to that sort of first mover advantage, and do something differently. There's a really nice LinkedIn post earlier today, actually, that I read, which said, you know, this guy had invested in 10 unicorns or something. Of course he had, it's LinkedIn. Probably not a real person. But, you know, at the end of the day, they didn't just do this, and this. They did something different from everybody else. So, you know, it's a really nice book to talk about how to either disrupt or make it look like you're disrupting the market that you're in with what you've got. So, yeah, that's a good one.
That's a kind of a massive business book, which doesn't get mentioned enough on this show. So, yeah, I may have to go and reread it again, or a shortened version of it anyway. We'll go get AI to give me the clip notes. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
So it's going to sound a bit weird saying from coming, you know, given everything we've talked about, but we still put a lot of faith and a lot of our leads come from SEO. So everyone says it's kind of died. It's all about paid media, et cetera, but actually, given what we sell at Patchworks, by having relevant data up there, so we've built a really nice AI generation model for building web pages. Every time we add a connector to our marketplace, and I think we're over 140 now, effectively, you have to say you can connect it to another 130 systems, right? Because you wouldn't want to put up a web page that says connect commerce towards the big commerce or big commerce to Shopify, because that would be bad, right, for obvious reasons. So we use a little Airtable to say what type of system it is. But if you do put up a new WMS, connect it to everything that's not a WMS, right? Writing that as content would take ages. So we use a bit of AI to help with that, not surprisingly. Chunks us through the Airtable using Patchworks, talking to OpenAI, builds the pages, pushes them into Shopify. It means our SEO is really good. And so we get quite a lot of leads from people searching for, can you integrate this to this? And they find a page saying, you can do that with Patchworks. Click here to find out how you can do it, if you know what I mean. So SEO for us is still a really big lead channel. And I could see, you know, that kind of AI content generation piece for brands and for retailers, that's still a really nice way of doing it from that perspective. And look, it costs what OpenAI costs at the end of the day, and a bit of Patchworks for running it through. So I'll turn that into a pitch, sorry.
No, that's okay. I like it. It's a really good example of how automation can deliver in ways you wouldn't have thought it would. And also liked when you were saying about the fact, you know, for the sort of thing you sell, because you're selling a problem solution, then, you know, your core target are those people who've got a problem, that problem right now, and they're actively Googling for it, which is a lot of e-commerce brands as well. So love that advice. Definitely cross-sector. Thank you for that one, Jim. A tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
It's going to sound very odd, but Apple Notes is what I go to all the time. it syncs to my phone. I'm on a Mac, so it does help, if you know what I mean. But anything that syncs and shares data. So Apple Notes for me personally, I can pop it into my phone. It's there, sat there waiting for me on my desktop. That is absolutely super useful, right? I can record a little voice note into it now because I've upgraded it. Again, that'll be there waiting for me. From a team perspective, we're heavy users of the Google Office solution, mainly for collaboration. It's fantastic for that, right? So we're building out a model this morning for predicting Q3 forecasting and all that kind of good stuff. And the fact you can tag and comment and everybody can dive straight into that sheet makes all the difference compared to some of the kind of older solutions that we have out there. But yeah, they're my two, really. And it's a bit weird, right? It's a free one. It's free if you decide to spend £1,000 on a phone and £1,000 on a laptop. It's not really free at all, is it?
But it's that idea of having something that when it's in your head, you can get it on the tech and it just goes to the right place.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're WhatsApping yourself or you're, you know, whatever method it is, I think it's absolutely essential just to get the stuff out of your head so your head can start thinking about something else.
100%. I actually used to keep a notepad next to my desk when I was a programmer because I'd come up to solutions to difficult programming problems in my sleep. I would suddenly wake up and go, oh, that's that query. And I'd write it all down, if you know what I mean. And then I'd wake up having forgotten that I'd done that and find it next to my bed and go, oh, yeah, that was me, I hope. Maybe it wasn't.
Well, there was a little gremlin just coming in and writing notes for you at night. The final top tip then for you, Jim, is the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
So really close to my heart, this one. We've just got our silver from Greenly at Patchworks, I'm really pleased to say. So we have an EV car scheme that we put in place. So anybody listening in the UK, the EV car scheme is a fantastic way of also avoiding some of the national insurance increases that we've got coming this year because it comes off pre-tax, not surprisingly. And it's a really nice benefit to offer to your teams. And obviously anybody who's driving, you can argue about the carbon neutrality of electric versus petrol, of course, but you know, it's a really nice tax advantage ultimately from that side of it as well. We've partnered with a company called Karma. So Karma can work with an e-commerce brand to effectively plant a tree for every order that goes out or for every X orders. So we had a Patchworks event at the end of last year, and they planted a tree for every single attendee, which was fantastic for them. In fact, they planted 500 in the end. We didn't have 500. The venue only held 130, so that was good. But that would have been bad, right? The venue was suddenly listening to this and go, hang about, we're over our fire and safety. But no, I would actually push, you know, people towards Karma. I think they're a really, really nice solution. They work with e-commerce brands. They work with very large government institutions, to plant small to forest worth of trees and sequester that carbon in the atmosphere. So yeah, we need to do more for that, I think. It's gonna be an interesting 4 years, I would argue, globally, to make sure that let's hope we can bring it back again at the end of it.
Yeah, let's avoid that tangent. But yeah, completely agree with you. What else can we do to keep everyone sane and alive? But karma.earth is how you find the team at Karma. They are awesome, and they do every time I catch up with Jim, one of the founders, I discover another Jim, not the Jim I'm chatting to now. There's two Jims. Every time I come up with Karma Jim, I find another cool thing that they're doing, which is just so worthy and so awesome and so heartfelt and so decent, clever, marketing savvy. They're a really, really cool company to work with. So yeah, I will second your recommendation for Karma too. Thank you so much for all of that. Before we say goodbye, though, for those who are going, I need Jim and the Patchworks team on my integration journey, tell us a bit more about what you guys do and how they can get in contact with you.
So, yeah, absolutely. Patchworks Integration Platform as a Service, another one of those lovely acronyms we all like. What does it mean? we're a web-based integration platform, not surprisingly, which allows you to connect any system with an API to any other system with an API as quickly as possible. So it could be that you can connect, say, Shopify to PeopleVox, for instance, or BigCommerce to PeopleVox using one of our blueprints. You can literally install one of those in 5 minutes. I know that because I did it yesterday for somebody who needed it for a demo, even though it was a Sunday. You know, have those systems connected with our out-of-the-box marketplace connectors. We also have what we call Connector Builder that allows you to import APIs and create a connection to any system with an API. And you can do that via, well, actually, at the end of last year, over 100 partners. So we have 100 active partners right now all around the world implementing solutions on Patchworks. We can start relatively cheaply, certainly cheaper than other iPaaSes that exist, and then we grow with usage. The idea is we can help anybody who needs that integration journey to be strategically correct from day one, but then grow with you from that side of it. And our website's wearepatchworks.com. If you go there, you'll find YouTube videos. You'll find the ability to sign up and create your own demo account, create a trial account with true SaaS from that perspective. All the documentation is in there, and there's a contact us form to connect through to our sales team. So we're about 300 customers all around the world, like I said, based in the UK, but with global reach.
Brilliant. We are patchworks.com for anyone who wants to go and have a look and have a try. Jim, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It has been an absolute pleasure catching up with you and getting to record our chat for everybody else as well. So thank you very much for being on the E-commerce Master Plan podcast.
Thank you for having me, Chloe. It's been a joy.
Well, what a fascinating chat there with Jim. Love catching up with him. He's got so much knowledge from his whole career and from the cool stuff they are currently getting involved with over at Patchworks. I think for me, key takeaways is that whilst integration is not to be taken lightly, it's not a quick project. You know, you can't just go decide now and in half an hour done something in 99% of cases. But if you bring the team along with you, you have an idea of where you're trying to get to, then there are small steps you can take along the way. To think of it as a whole, integrating and optimizing and automating the whole team and all your data flows is what essentially you're going to be doing. You can't just do the tech. You just can't just do the data. You've got to bring the whole team along with you. And really fascinating to hear Jim talking about how, you know, those kind of like multiple mini Shopify apps that I know so many of you got installed, they're finding people are able to consolidate those into one piece of Patchworks, which is saving them money, saving complication on the site, presumably speeding up the site as well, because as we all know, the more Shopify apps you have, the slower your website runs. So lots and lots of layers in there for you all to unpick. If you're heading on an integration journey this year, I think you are spot on where you should be going, what you should be doing. So I wish you all the best with it. Very exciting. Now, you can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those brilliant top tips and the links to the things we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar, and you will go straight to the correct episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on many of those other things we share to help you improve your business. If you like this episode, then make sure you check out episode 526, which wasn't very long ago, which was our annual Top Tips for Success in 2025 episode, which features Jim giving you some more advice and a whole load of other experts, eight other experts, in fact, sharing their top tips for success in 2025. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. We bring you a new interview every single week because we want to inspire and help you to succeed and thrive with your business, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
It's time to download our 500 top tips to make your e-commerce business more profitable ebook. Go to ecmp.info/ebook now.